I went right in beginning of the visit with Mr. Nealon this Tuesday morning, the 7th of August, 73. John went right in beginning of this unexpected visit with Mr. Nealon this Tuesday morning, the 7th of August, 73. Time went right in the beginning of the visit with Mr. Nealon this Tuesday morning, the 7th of August, 73. Channel one right and beginning of visit Mr. Nealon this Tuesday morning, the 7th of August, 73. And it's a good bit before the tape starts. It's a good bit before the tape starts.
What in the world? Faith?
She got a sack full of
pears from Miss Fanny.
Oh, don't tell.
We got talking about pears, and I told her I sure loved them. And then she looked over at Rick, and she asked him if he did. And he said, Miss Fanny, you've never seen anything like me eating pears. And so she said, well, I'm going to get you a paper sack. You pick you some. And she sat there and told
him. Well, by George, they smell like pears, eh?
Oh, they smell
they
so
smell good.
Good. Another harvest.
Another, yeah.
Put them right here where we can smell them.
I'll leave them right there. You
I can
to get
smell
one
all the way over here.
That's what it'll get a yellow one and smell the end of it. That's still a green one. Some of them love green ones and love it.
Well, I'll warm up your little.
Well, you rode on the wagon.
Well, yeah. And it, you know, I got it didn't work too well till I started driving Emma.
So you started driving Emma.
It didn't work well at all because the wagon made too much noise. And when I was sitting behind Coleman, he couldn't hear a word I said.
Oh, you was on his back.
I was at the back, and the wagon made so much noise that he couldn't hear me. And so after about 10 minutes, I realized he couldn't hear what I said, so I just enjoyed the ride. Well, then I decided, just out of the blue, I decided I wanted to drive Emma, so I asked him if I could, and he said, all right. So we swapped places. Well, that was all right because then I turned and talked back to him, and he could hear me then. And I drove Emma the rest of the way, and so that worked a whole lot better.
You drove Emma.
I drove Emma.
Debbie, are you
and I what? told him that the next time he brought her over here, I was going to drive the car over and drive the mule back, and then drive her back for her. That mule was so much fun to drive.
That mule is part human, you know.
She's really fun to drive.
She enjoyed the occasion too, you know she did.
Well, and that was just what it took to change everything around. He didn't talk about too much going over there. We just sort of chatted, you know, chittered. We didn't talk about too much because it was a little noisy in the wagon.
Oh, was it?
He couldn't keep up with hearing me too well.
Well, that's strange. I thought it'd be quiet. That's one reason, one thing I look for.
Quiet? Everything on that wagon rattles. The wheels rattle, the shaft rattle, the harness rattles.
He didn't drive it on the road, did he?
Well, see, what he does is he can't drive it too far off the road. So he gets Emma right next to the pavement like this, just on the grass. Well, one wheel's on the pavement.
Oh, that makes
and
it
the other,
I
and,
thought
and
he
it just goes bam, 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 bam.
Well, I thought what he used to do, he had all that territory in between the highway and the railroad.
Oh, that's right,
That's where he drove.
Well, I think it's a ditch. It's too much of a ditch now. He can't get over that far.
Yeah.
He just keeps him a little bit off, but he doesn't drive her on the pavement. No, because that hurts her feet. But he just a little bit.
A young fellow, a hard worker, and he wanted to be right. I always appreciated that. And so together we traveled every road and trail in every county in the state in the generalized land use map.
Well, I didn't know you had a sort of a sidekick that went along with you. Who was that?
That was Russell Henderson. He had just graduated in soil. He's a farm boy. He was accustomed to work.
Well, he was
and
a farm boy from Florida?
Practical.
From Florida?
From Florida. He grew up in Madison County. I knew him before he ever came here as a student because I was exhibiting Flagler County's agricultural products at the state fair in Jacksonville, and he and another boy from there were exhibiting their 4-H club pigs at the state fair. So I got acquainted with him there briefly. But when he came here, he finally studied agriculture and specialized in soils. And he was a good man, so he helped a lot. Of course, he just decided whether it was the technical name of it, that was all.
But he wasn't afraid to
but
work.
He didn't have a word to say about what its future use should be. That was my responsibility. The only state in the South that completed in a 3.5-year period its state survey. All the rest of them. We worked at that thing. We didn't fool around, but you know, there's too many.
And he was with you all that time.
Yeah, he was with me.
And he wasn't afraid
time.
To work.
Huh?
He wasn't afraid to work.
No, he was a hard worker. He
when
used
I kinda,
to work.
How'd you go about that, Mr. Nealon?
Well, we just traveled every road and trail, and as the Florida, you can find 3 or 4 different kinds of soil on 10 acres in some places. But you have to be practical. If a section of land had 40 acres of good farmland in the middle of it and 640 that would be useful only for the extensive uses, forestry, grazing, wildlife, or scenery, or something like that, depending on what it was. Now, the Everglades, I had to make a decision there. The Everglades State Park was under question. The Everglades people said, we won't accept this as a national park unless we can get this area where farming is being done included. Well, the farming there, I went down there, studied. I found out something about the Everglades. If you wade knee-deep 4 miles, you are more tired than if you climbed the mountains.
Oh, really?
That's hard on you. And both of us just petered out after 4 miles of it. You don't know how much it takes, energy it takes to push your way.
Yeah.
Well, I made the decision that it was not agricultural land because they go in there and clear the tall grass in a dry time and just have time enough to make 3 months to make a crop of tomatoes. But they can't plant them again there because the disease would wipe them out. That stays there 7, 8, 9 years in the soil. In that time, the thing grows up so thick in willows that nobody's ever cleared again. So I said, this is not agricultural land and belongs in the state, in the national park area. And so it was included on my recommendation. My boss was an agricultural PhD in economics, agricultural economics, and he depended on me because he was trained in the North and he didn't know so much about Florida, but if I said so, he usually agreed to let me have my way, no matter what happened, no matter how much opposition. For instance, down in the Plant City area, the U.S. boys, you know, people, you can't promote agriculture from Washington, you got to be on the ground. So they had a piece of ground there, the local people were delighted with it. They'd already bought a large number of mules. They were going to have an agriculture development, small acreages, 10, 20 acres. So I took my man, Russell Henderson, and I went down there and spent several days there, walking over every bit of it, studying the thing. I said, this is not agricultural land. Oh, the local people raised the roof. Duncan, you Fletcher, our representative in Washington, says it's a good project, and he condemns it. Oh, boy. The local people want that money spent there.
Yeah.
And so I condemned that as not being a good project. Well,
what kind of land
I wrote
was
it up. I wrote it up very carefully.
What kind of land was it?
It was wet land.
Yeah.
Poorly drained.
Yeah.
I told my soils man, I said, Russell, do you see that high water mark on those black gums in that little swamp there? That's knee-deep there. If it's knee-deep there and it may stay there during the rainy season, all this land be far too wet to be cultivated. You can't drain it. The Hillsborough River there will be level full. You couldn't drain it in there.
Yeah.
So I said, let's condemn this, and he didn't take any responsibility. The only thing he took was the name of the soil, Alien Fine Sand or whatnot.
Yeah.
Well, I had so much complaint, my boss said, you better go down there and make a resurvey on that. And I said, okay, I'll do that, the detailed one. And I went down there and I wrote it all up, exactly why. And I found out that the chairman of the Board of County Commissioners was a farmer who had a ridge, Oak Ridge, dry sandy land in the citrus grove almost adjoining that area. I found out further that he was an honest man. So I said, well, I'll get some support from him, I hope. So I went over to his grove overlooking the area, and I said, I've got a report here I've had a lot of complaints about, and I'd like you to look it over. Well, he said, let's go up on the porch and I'll look it over. So he leafed the whole thing over, had pictures. And he handed it back to me and he said, that's about right.
Ah.
So I had some support from an honest man. He had been chairman of the county commissioner there for many years. He was on some of my old schoolmates here in agriculture were involved in it, and they got on me for condemning it because they had approved it.
Yeah.
Not because they thought it was good, I don't suppose, because they didn't care, and there was important people favoring it, so they favored it.
Yeah.
So that's the way it is. But not for me.
Well, they could have.
So I'll say so.
They could have got plenty other sites, couldn't they?
Yes, they should have picked a much better site, but this was such a sorry piece of land, you could get it almost free, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, that was it.
Nobody wanted it. And there we can get a cheap piece of land, yep.
Yeah.
And up in Washington, what did they know about our backwoods?
Sure,
nothing.
Sure.
I wouldn't say anything about anything unless I've seen it.
Yeah. Well, now that's an interesting case.
Yeah.
Now, the man who was chairman of the county commission, he had, what did he have, a grove?
Yeah, a citrus grove up on a ridge, almost adjoining the area.
Yeah.
So I was fortunate there to find him.
Now, you went out there at his house on his porch? Is that where you
were?
Yeah,
I sat on his porch there where he looked it all over, and he handed it back and said, that's about right.
Yeah.
He was honest enough, and he knew. He'd lived there for years and years.
Yeah.
His son finally got to be director of extension here.
Good Lord.
Yeah, a good family of people. Good, solid citizens. Honest all the way.
Director of extension?
Yeah, here. He was assistant director. I knew him when he was working in Plant City. About the time I was having that trouble, he was working in National Agriculture. I can't remember the names of all those things they had then. And then he took the job of county agent in Marion County, and I worked with him there because I had a 4-H project, forestry project there. A piece of land was donated for our work. Planted some catalpas there even. Well, he cooperated with me there. Then the good man, hard worker, So then they gave him a job here as assistant to the extension director. And after a few years, the extension director retired and he was director. Good man. So he has written me several very encouraging notes since he retired. And I make out a detailed annual report, as you know, about my hardwood planting.
Yeah, we know about that. Now, where?
He said, his last comment, he said, "You're one of the greats." Yeah. This great. I don't care anything about credit or money. I just don't like to be condemned if I'm right. So I don't get along with the profession.
That's a nice case, Mr. Nealon. Now, that's while you were in the land use?
Yes, I was in land use planning.
When you did that?
I was state land use planner.
At that time?
Yeah, at that time. The director of extension and experiment station called me when I came home. I was working with the State Forest Service. The State Forest was an honest man at that time, but through crooked politics, he was kicked out. He took care of me. He's the one that came down and told me I ought to be working for him when the county hadn't paid me for 5 months for my work. And
well, you did.
So I went with him for about 7.5 years, something like that.
What else did you do on that land use?
And he put me in charge of 12 counties, and I was hated by the all his graduates. They just come from Pennsylvania, New York, and Iowa, and Wisconsin. They didn't know anything about Florida. Naturally, the good men, but they just didn't know. It takes a while to learn the state. It's so different.
And you ran into that in the land use.
Yes, from that he called me up. I got in 10 o'clock one night. I had 12 counties I was supervising. Fire protection in, and he said, "We want you to take that job." And I said, "Well, I'm happy in what I'm doing. How long will that job last?" Oh, he said, "I couldn't tell you." Well, I said, "Then where would I be if I quit?" Oh, he said, "You don't need to worry. You'll always have a place to land." So I said, "Well."
Right into the middle of the Depression.
Yeah. So I completed that job. I still get letters from Dr. Hartman. He's retired a long time ago. A Christmas card or a letter commending me on the effort. It was hard work, and we.
What else did you do?
And I took it seriously.
What else did you do on that?
Oh, on
land use.
On what? Land use plan?
Uh-huh.
Well, we mapped the state, you know, in the generalized.
What did you do when you'd go all around on the back roads?
Well, he had the map of the county with him, all in sections, and we traveled the roads and trails in the woods and everywhere to get a generalized map. After a while, you get so you can tell by the way that this won't change for a mile. And then you wouldn't have time to walk that mile over, but you'll get close enough to it on the sides and on one side so you can tell by the trees and the terrain that that won't change for a mile. So that would be included. Then the next section, 640 acres. How about it? We take it in. Took a lot of time and hard work and boring 1,000 holes because my assistant wouldn't take the previous survey. Once in a while, he disagreed with the man that originally, here and there, we found little areas and counties that had been surveyed. He wouldn't take their word. He'd bore them down there, and then he'd come back and say, "I disagree. This isn't what he says. Isn't it Agora? It's Zanzibar or some other name." That's just a wild name. But after he explained why he disagreed, I had to agree with him. He wanted to be right.
Well, for the fish, give us a case.
And so he was even one of the professors here in soil, who taught soils, and made a survey down in Volusia County that he disagreed with.
What was it that he disagreed about down there in Volusia
County? Well,
it
wasn't named under the classified name. It, you know, some of those soils border upon each other, and the line of demarcation between two soils is sometimes abrupt and sometimes not. Sometimes it gradually grades into another soil. Maybe he didn't bore no holes to find out just where the borders were.
Oh, you had to be—he had to be pretty thorough.
Yeah,
about
he had to be very careful,
and bore
I admired him, so he wanted to be right.
And bore a lot of holes.
Bore the holes. We bored thousands of holes in Florida to make sure that the subsoil was within 12 inches, 24 inches, or 36 inches, maybe 36 inches, or even 24 inches of sand on top. Not agriculture land.
Let me tell you, Mr. Nealon, since you were here, we just saw, just last week, we put in some sweet potatoes down here.
Uh-huh.
It's at the low place there on that hill. And most of the soil that was on the hill kind of slipped on down there. It's flat there. Well, even so, we plowed it with a mule.
Good.
And
that sounds good to me.
We got Coleman's old Coleman. He's
old time farmer.
Oh yeah, he's worked a mule. He said he'd been raising sweet potatoes 80 years. He says he thought he probably started around when he's 4 years old. And
I used to raise them.
Tell you, we healed up the roll.
Yeah. Pretty low ground, was it?
Huh?
Pretty low ground?
Oh, it's not what you call low ground.
Not too low. No water table there.
Oh, no. No, it drains. And then yesterday he came and sort of plowed the middles and threw it up there on the roll. Threw that one up, you see.
Yeah.
And what he was doing now, and then he's going to come back next week and plow out the rest of it. Well, he got down to the subsoil, Mr.
What
Leland.
Was it, clay?
No, I don't know whether it's clay or not, but what he comes to is that little old colorless sort of or sand or something.
A little kind of white sand.
That dusty,
yeah, well,
pulverized stuff.
It may be poor sand underneath there, but if you get anything, it has clay within 12 or 18 inches of the surface, and if it has some limestone in it too, you've got a very productive soil considering Florida.
Yeah, but what I was thinking is, you don't want to just pull that old subsoil up there.
Yeah, that's dead soil.
It's dead soil.
You know what we used to call dead furrows in the early days, and you plow with horses and mules. A field, you start in the middle and you throw two furrows together, and they get wider and wider and wider and wider. And finally, it takes too long to go around. So then you start over again the next piece. Between that, you have. What you have is something like this. You have a place where the soil's the plowshare throws it this way and the plowshare throws it that way. And for a distance of about a foot, you're down about 12 inches below the surface.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is dead soil.
Yeah.
It's dead furrow, no productivity in it.
Yeah.
That used to depend on me to do the sowing of our fields of oats and wheat. And you know, you have to have your bag quite handy. Maybe you've done some of it.
Yeah.
And you toss it and step and toss and stepping off till you get through the field. Well, here's where your oats or wheat is up there, we'll say 4 feet high. Here it's about 6 inches high. So some of the seed gets in the dead furrow, you know, no productivity
yeah.
there. So that's the reason why that white sand there would be unproductive.
Yeah.
All the productiveness in soil is in the upper 6 inches.
Yeah.
Of
the yeah.
And the trees seed 90% in the upper 6 inches of the soil. I've been studying my forest planting closely. I don't go out there just to gawk.
Mm-hmm.
I'll learn something. And so,
Mr. Nealon, now what else did you do out there on those side roads?
On what?
On those side back roads.
Oh, well, he's reading
you,
I got
just
the job.
Two of you.
Yeah. The reason I got the job was because I was supposed to know something about Florida soils, and I did know a little.
Yeah.
And I
learned
a lot more after that 3.5 years was over, because I studied every minute I was out there.
Yeah.
And
well, now, that way you wasn't connected with anybody. You just go from your office.
Yeah.
Where was your
right.
office?
It was my responsibility.
Where was you living then? Trenton?
Entirely living here in Gainesville.
Living in Gainesville?
But I was home very little. Very little at the time. We were traveling.
And all that time then, you didn't need much of an office, did you?
Yes, I had an office and a secretary because I wrote up every night a good deal of information on the area covered. And so she typed that and furnished it on to the regional office in Atlanta.
Yeah.
So I had plenty to do day and night.
Yeah, but you didn't have anybody looking right over you. Okay.
No, I was responsible for everything. I was the chief. I was the state land use planner. What I said had to be accepted. There was no authority. The man above me didn't know.
Yeah.
Naturally, I don't blame him for not knowing. He depended on me for knowing.
Yeah.
So it was my responsibility, and I wanted to be right.
In 12 counties.
How many do we have? 67 in Florida?
Yeah.
67 counties we surveyed in that 3.5 years.
You
and reconnaissance survey, not a detailed survey.
You
and 2 or 3 counties had been surveyed.
You and who?
Russell Henderson. He's
now
retired, a soil specialist.
Two of you?
Two of us.
All the counties?
All we did, all that was done, we did.
Mm.
A responsible job it was, and we took it seriously. Nowadays, that's all out.
Yeah.
Sit in the office most of the time. I get discouraged and disgusted with the way things go. People just think they get their salary by sitting in the office.
Let me tell you, Mister, that's not helping many. Now that's something, Debbie.
That's a terrific job.
Yes, it was quite a job to do. Have had no complaints except a few. For instance, over in West Florida on the Blackjack Ridges there, that deep, dry, sandy hills there.
Yeah.
Oh, we were going to have tongue orchards there, a promotional outfit in the north. And I condemned that.
Now, tell us about that.
Well, you know, a state land use planner, I did have some responsibility, and I was in a position, if I condemned it, my boss agreed with me, the government agreed with me, see, and I could prevail. So there, I condemned that as being not a practical thing. The soil is too poor, therefore, that type of tree.
Give us the circumstances down there. Give us the circumstances down there.
Up there, that's in West Florida, extreme West Florida. Well, the land there was originally, I say, in sand pine, which is our thinnest, most unproductive soil that will grow trees in Florida, sand pine.
Yeah.
But they burned the rain so much, excuse me, sand pine is very sensitive to fire. They have wiped out the sand pine completely there, and the oaks that could stand the fire remain. And so we, the common term there is black jack oak, turkey oak, the book calls it. Where it grows, that deep, dry, unproductive sand, only longleaf pine will succeed there.
Is that right?
But if you burn it the way you did for what little grazing you can get out of it, even your longleaf pine with a scattering of trees can't reproduce because the tiny things, that tree will remain in the grass stage from 4 to 6 years before it goes up. Once it gets up and makes that strong white bud, fire won't destroy it. But while it's still small, a year or two, and they burned at least every 2 years, so it would never survive except here and there, an occasional one.
So what were they proposing to do?
They were proposing to sell that to northern people largely, the southern people knew better, for tongue oil. 100 acres, they'd cleared for them at their expense and help them get it planted. The tongue oil trees, tongue oil, that failed even on good land. It wasn't too profitable a thing. Now all the tongue orchards, even on good land, have been abandoned because labor costs you too much. You can't afford to pick them for what you get off of it. The nuts are very saturated with the oil that makes an excellent paint. It's durable, makes a durable paint. So that's all gone by the. But I had to condemn that. And then a little area up at the bordering Georgia, north of Marianna, there they had another farming area, the U.S. government people. 10 and 20 acre farm. You can't make a living on that. Today, that's too small an acreage. So I said, that isn't a practical thing. Oh boy, did they fuss about it. Then some of it further west was on good land, but some of it they included on this deep, dry, blackjack ridge sand. And so I just had to do quite a bit of condemning there. And withstanding the attack, naturally, of the dollar that wanted to sell the land for money.
Yeah. Well, now, did they stand to make a right smart out of that?
Oh, yes. You know, you can buy an acre there in those days, maybe, for $5 and sell it for $40. That'd be pretty good money. And the poor Yankee up north, I got into trouble. Maybe I told you about it before. I had a friend here, entomologist, while I was in Flagler County still. And he sent me a letter. He wrote me a letter. I knew him while I was a student here. He wrote me a letter and he said, my nephew up in Pennsylvania has been approached by a man who wants to sell him some farmland in Flagler County, where I was county agent. He said, I'd like to have your advice on what to do about it. Well, I said, this is a confidential letter. maybe I told you. And I explained that the crowd that was selling there looked to me like it was a fly-by-night thing. And they just wanted to sell the land, and that's all, at a profit. Well, he sent his nephew that letter, a PhD man too. And he sent his nephew that letter. That nephew showed it to the salesman. The salesman up north, he wrote the county commissioners a letter. This is the copy of it, my letter, my confidential letter. He said, this is the kind of sales opposition we have in your county. That went to the chairman of the board of county commissioners, who usually was one of the three real estate men on the board interested in helping sell such land. But this time, the chairman temporarily was a farmer who lived in that area of the county. And he was an honest man, and I was sitting here, you know, I was sitting about where you, if you were at the head of the table where he was, I was sitting here at an presenting my annual report, which I gave the county commissioners a copy of each year. This is the way they responded on it. What shall we do with it? We got our annual report here. File it! Nobody ever looked at it, as far as I knew. Anyway, the chairman was a farmer who lived there, and he understood why I wrote that letter, I think, because he passed it under the table so the real estate people, members of the board, couldn't see it, and whispered to me, what shall I do with it? And I looked at it under the table, saw it was a copy of my letter. I said, throw it in the waste paper basket. He says, that's what I thought. I had some support there. If the real estate man had been in charge, I'd been fired again.
Yeah.
So
you know, that's one of the first things I came in contact with down here, Mr. Nealon. The people down here who expect to make a living off of the Yankees,
yeah,
who come down here to buy property or maybe have a little operation, and they just work them for all they can get.
Well, they rob them. There's no conscience.
None whatever.
They don't want to know.
And furthermore, I found that it was just as true of the rich people as it was the poor.
That's right. They're just all the same. And this country and the world over hasn't gotten any better. Dishonesty just makes
and
me squirm. I don't like it.
And furthermore, I found that they were willing to take me on.
They'd catch you if they could.
Yes, they'd take me.
They'd take anybody on. They can get a dollar out of it. There's no conscience in them. That's the reason.
Well, now, that's bred into them down here. Up in my country, they don't do that.
No, I think you have more honest people.
Well, it's not a matter of that. We got nobody coming in like that.
No, you don't have the opportunity for so much crookedness as Florida had.
It was just a constant temptation,
Every once in a while, somebody come down, and they kept him from seeing me, you know.
Yeah.
And he already had a down payment, perhaps, on 40 acres of farmland.
Yeah.
And he said, you go out and look at that land and see what you think of it? And I said, sure, I'll go out.
Mr. Neal, and I've seen some of these people come down here from up there that I knew. And they were right sturdy people, prudent, and they just couldn't resist this idea of buying little Florida land.
Yeah,
they just couldn't resist it. They had no more need for it than a peanut.
No, it's easy. I don't know. It's attractive somehow through the name Florida has, and they'd like to think it'd be nice to own a piece of Florida, and so on. Well, we had to come here. I didn't have to, but after we lost everything we had built up in 30 years.
Mr. Nealon, when you what did you all do? All of you, all six of you get on the train and just...
Right. So I had a... what do they call these sales? Auction sale.
Yeah.
And sold the horses and the plows and the harrows for practically nothing.
You couldn't move them.
And you couldn't take anything and equipment away. They could just pay what they wanted to. I got sore when some of our best horses were to be sold at $15 or $20 when they were worth $40 or
yeah.
$50. And so I just was in the background, and whenever they got to $15 for a good horse, I bid $20. When they went to $20, I bid $30. I heard the auctioneer was a local man. He was pretty good at such things. So he, all he heard was my voice. He said, "I got offer for $30, then they quit. So I saved the horse. I'd rather give it away than have somebody rob me.
Yeah.
So I helped out there because I just don't like things to go too bad.
And the other people were doing the same thing.
Yeah, the other people all lost everything. One poor old fellow, our nearest neighbor, he drank himself to death.
Well,
he didn't stay sober for 6 months and he died.
He had a...
Everything dying that you'd build up in a lifetime.
He had a cellar full of wine.
He had a what?
He had a wine cellar.
Yeah, he had a, most of us did.
Yeah.
We made about 2,000 gallons every year.
Yeah. So if he wanted to drink himself,
sure,
he could.
You know,
it
was so common with us, we never took a drink.
Well, how did you all... located in Flagler County.
Oh. They had a national advertising campaign on
Flagler County.
St. John's Park Development Company. I knew the man, E.F. Warner. He's a lawyer. He was in charge. And you could buy 10 or 20 acres pretty reasonably in those days. And Dad said, when he saw everything wilting and dying, orchards and vineyards going to nothing, another man put a bullet through his head. He couldn't take it. So we left then, and he said, "We're moving to Florida.
Yeah.
I hear it rains enough. We don't need to irrigate. The irrigation's what ruined it. And it took our water away." Yeah, what did they do?
Well,
I
put that what happened to you, what'd you do? After you got here, got a hold of the people?
Yeah, but I wanted to finish.
But you finished that before, Mr.
Yeah.
Neal. Let me tell you, Mr. Neal, you won't let me turn you.
Yeah, I do.
You
won't let me finish what I'm saying.
But
I'm
you
getting
said
old
it.
And cranky.
But you said it so
I
many
want
times.
To finish what I say.
You said it so many times, you see.
Well, why don't you just quit then, if I've said it all already?
Well,
let me
turn you,
oh.
You see?
Yeah, okay.
We don't have this picture over in
Flagler. If I can get turned, what do you want to turn me into? I'm willing. Barkins is willing.
It was just a big real estate operation over there that you all got in contact with.
Yeah, it was just advertising.
Yeah.
So much an acre buys a truck farm in Florida.
Yeah.
So we bought sight unseen with the understanding that if we didn't like what we bought, we could get a piece we did like.
You could swap.
So we landed there, all six of us. One night we landed in Jacksonville and caught a river steamer down Crescent City and to St. John's Park where the dock was.
Yeah.
And then for a week they showed us land. They never showed us the piece we bought. I bet it was in the bottom of a lake or stream or something. So we didn't like any of that.
Yeah.
We didn't know anything about Florida land, but Dad always took me along because he thought I knew more.
Yeah.
And I didn't know anything much either. Naturally. Know anything about it. What do you know about Florida if you've been here 2 days? Nothing. So anyway,
yeah.
after a week, we didn't like that. It didn't look good to us. So finally, Dad says, let's get us a postal digger and we'll take to the woods ourselves. And we walked east about 4 miles, testing the soil as we went along. Finally, we came to a place where we found clay, and 12 and 18 inches is varying under the surface. We said, this is it. And we chose Bladen fine sandy loam, the best farm soil in the county, without knowing it.
Yeah, you lucked out, didn't you?
We were in luck.
But you still had to clear a lot of it.
Oh, everything had to be cleared. The first year, I dug stumps and burned out blind stumps and dead stumps, and it had just been logged a year or so before,
yeah.
And the wood hadn't rotten, and those stumps were something
yeah.
to dig out. One big one, double stump there, took me a day and a half. Hard work.
Hard work.
Yeah,
yeah.
Hard work.
And then you got that big hole.
Yeah, got the, well, you could fill it up, you know, the same dirt would practically fill it up. But anyway, I told Dad after there nearly a year, I said, you know, we know anything about farming in Florida. Everything's
well,
different, so I better go to the university
well,
and take that
to all six of you.
Yeah, the brothers stayed there, and I came to Gainesville
yeah.
and took the 2 years
Well,
course.
Let's stay over there now a little bit. All six of you then worked steady at it for a year.
Yeah.
That
health was not too good.
Well,
he
now you both, but you four boys, wasn't anything wrong with your health?
No, we were all okay. We dug like everything.
You were 19.
Yep.
One brother was older.
Yeah, one brother was 4 years older, 9 months.
And the other two younger.
The other two, 1 or 2 years younger. So we were digging stumps there and palmetto roots
yeah.
and clearing up new ground on rough work.
Yeah. Now, you went over here at the university, and then while you were, they stayed over there?
Yeah,
while
yeah
you were there?
They stayed on the farm.
And then when you got the job over there as farm foreman, they all come over there and went to school?
No, not all at one time. This is what happened. After I finished my 2 year course and my grades are straight A because I was there to learn something. I wasn't there to pass examinations. So I went back to the farm to give my older brother though, the second year I was there, he joined me.
Oh, the second year?
The older boy.
Yeah.
Then I went back when I finished along, but he had another year to do. I went back to the farm to give my two younger brothers a chance to come, and I would take care of the farm work.
Yeah.
Well, they wrote me pretty soon after that, a month or so, they offered me the job as farm foreman on the experimentation farm. Dad said, you better accept it. He's getting old, and he said it might mean something to you, so we all were here. And then the older brother graduated.
Oh, you were all here at one time?
Yeah, we were all here briefly at one time, but the older brother graduated ahead of the two younger brothers, so he got a job with the state plant board. They hired him in eradicating citrus canker or something like that.
Yeah.
I forgot now. I get that and the
yeah.
white fly mixed up.
Yeah.
But they came pretty close together, those two pests, and so he
yeah.
worked in that.
And did he keep on with the plant board?
No, he was never an agriculturalist.
He didn't care for it?
No, he just wasn't naturally that way.
Yeah.
And so he took a job with the railroad.
Before the war?
Yeah, it was before World War One.
He got into the railroad before World War One.
Yeah, and I was still farm foreman, but, you know, everybody was being called, and I had read the history of the United States Navy by Willis J. Abbott, a big book from starting from a
one volume.
Called it one volume. Maybe you know about it. And I thought there's just nothing like a salty sailor. And John Paul Jones and all what you had ahead. Well, so I went up Jacksonville and enlisted in the Navy for the duration only.
And the others did the same thing?
No, my younger brother didn't. One went with the Army. He loved horses so much, and so he went with the cavalry up in Ohio or somewhere where they had a big training camp there.
That was the youngest.
That's the second youngest. And the youngest one went back to the Hallowed Hills of home, and he finished up his work in Berkeley at the university there, got his bachelor's there, the youngest boy. And but he was in the service up in Washington, Oregon, some camp up there.
Yeah.
But he never got into actual fray. I was the only one that did.
Well,
fight.
He went back with your family, with your parents.
No, parents stayed right here.
Well, and
they stayed on the farm.
And he went back west.
He went back on his own.
On his own.
He loved it out there. It's just as I did. Yeah, he had a hard time making his way because there were no high schools out there in my day. Nearest one 14 miles away by horse and buggy, you couldn't be fooling around with high school education.
Yeah.
So we took international correspondence courses and so on and tried to make up as much as good. Well, anyway.
Well, so you four boys wasn't together very much then after
not
you got
too
here.
Much. No, never were together again after that. But he, to make his high school education, he collected yerba buena. You know what yerba buena is? That's Spanish for a good herb.
Yeah.
That is a native plant that grows in the more or less desert like dry areas, and every time he wasn't in class he made it up into the mountains there on the hills and collected those because they paid a pretty good price for the leaves. And so that helped him get through school and what other work he could get too. Nobody ever gave us a dime. Nowadays they pay him. They give you plenty of money too, or do you have to work a little? In my day, you couldn't get 1 cent from anyone. I pulled weeds at 12.5 cents an hour every minute I wasn't in class and could get a job.
Well, Mr. Nealon, your older brother, while you was farm foreman, he left the plant board and went with the railroad.
Yeah, he left the plant board and went with the railroad.
And he stayed in the railroad the rest
of his
life.
He was with the plant board several years, though, before, but it wasn't his field at all.
But
more,
he did like
more of an office man.
Oh, was he?
And, you know, we all have our weak and strong points, some like this, and some fortunately so. Because we all
now, which one of you got in trouble in here over they're suspicious about during the war, before the war?
What was he suspicious about?
Well, don't you know you all got into trouble by being for the Germans or something?
Oh, yes. In those days, Germans were... I noticed some of the professors here. They tried to change their name so it didn't sound so German.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much prejudice in
this
world. I just don't like prejudice.
Yeah. So it was just another case of that?
Yeah. Some good men be condemned on
purely
because their name sounded German.
Well, who'd they get after? You?
No, it didn't bother me. I just told them I was a Swede. Well, my folks came from Norway. Nealand, is that, the meaning of that is never land. And... in its later language, so that I had that to live up to. I never had enough money
never
to
land.
Buy anything.
Well, which one was it that got after? That your older brother?
No, I think we all got more or less in trouble.
Oh, did you?
Because we spoke the language. That's the trouble.
Well, how did you speak the language?
Well, folks were in Germany long enough. My mother came from Christianity, now Oslo.
Yeah.
And Dad, I think, is German, but he spent little time there. But the folks were more long-headed than we are today, even we were kids. In Europe, if you don't know two languages, you're not educated. So they insisted that nothing would be spoken in our house but German.
Oh.
And so I learned the language perfectly and still know how to read and write, even in the old script. Because I wouldn't write to home to mother unless it is in the German script, which is more beautiful than the English script.
Yeah.
So the language with me is, well, after 50 years, you get a little rusty.
Yeah.
That is, I like to read the famous authors in German because of their style and thinking and the high quality of their thinking.
Yeah.
Just the same as I like to read John Gray, or who was it that wrote the Elegy of the Country Churchyard?
Yeah, Gray. Thomas Gray.
Thomas Gray. I can't remember the names anymore.
Yeah.
Thomas Gray.
But now, you haven't done enough, so you wouldn't be able to just easy way shift from English into German.
Oh,
if
yes.
Talking.
Yes. If I meet a German, I have no trouble at all.
Yeah.
A German came over here from Germany. A friend of mine that knew him, and he wanted to see my hardwood forest planting. So we conversed in German the whole time. I
yeah.
had this only this difficulty.
Once in a while,
I want to put an English word in there instead of
the
German word.
Yeah. But now, what did you say to him in German, Mr. Neal?
Well, I just explained the trees, you know,
well,
by their name.
Well, how's it sound?
Fichte, pine is a Fichte.
Well, just go ahead and explain.
Oak is an Eiche.
Go ahead. Go ahead and explain a little bit.
Birch is a Buchen. Buche. B-U-C-H-E.
Go ahead and explain a little bit to him now in German.
Well, wissen Sie, was der Baum ist?
Yeah.
You know what tree that is?
Go ahead. Don't stop. Just keep it going.
Das ist eine Tanne, he'd say.
Yeah.
And so on.
Don't stop. Just keep it going.
Well, you know, I don't feel at home. If I could talk to you, I'd keep going, but I don't feel at home making up conversation. Are you good at that?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not any good at German, Mr. Neelan.
At what?
At German.
Oh, are you?
No, I don't speak German.
Oh, I see. I thought you might have another language.
And you all just brought up there. All the time you were there in California, you just use German at home.
Use German only. I wouldn't think of speaking to the folks in anything else.
Is that right?
We were brought up that way, and if you're not, you're not going to have the pure language.
And even after you got here, you spoke German at home.
Oh, yes. Yes, sir.
Well, gee whiz.
Yeah. Yes, I think you lose something if you don't know but one language. You are...
When
I
was
restricted.
Was your father, stepfather, or just your stepfather?
My stepfather was the one that he was an Austrian from Du meine Streit.
Yeah.
Oh, you my Austria. He was an Austrian, but he spoke German well.
Sure.
He just had that Austrian dialect a little now and then, and some
expressions. You didn't even know your own father.
Oh, yes. I knew him quite well.
How old were you when he died?
I was 6 years old when he died.
And you remembered him?
Yeah, I remembered him when I went to school those 3 miles when I was 5. But when I was 4, I remembered him quite well because we were clearing up new ground back there, just as we did here in Florida.
Oh.
And there was fire there. And my younger brother, he was 3, I was 4. We got to playing with fire coals there, and that little rascal put some red hot coals in his pocket. He thought they were pretty. Set his pants afire. And Dad got us out of there in a hurry. And we weren't in enough of a hurry to suit him. So we knew we were going to get our bottoms well padded by the time we didn't obey as we should have.
Yeah.
But we started to run towards home, towards the house, which is about a quarter mile away.
Yeah.
And he took a few quick strides, took us each by the hand, and never said a word. I knew I was going to get dusty.
Yeah.
You know, that impressed me more than if he warmed my bottom.
Yes.
Because
what happened to him, Mr. Neal?
Oh, he had TB. See,
oh.
That was the trouble.
Yeah.
He lived in New York, Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And he had he was a wheelwright. They built carriages. And the shop work in that cold climate, he heard that California had a much better climate for weak lungs.
Yeah.
So he went there.
Oh, I see.
And he bought that little piece of land up in the hills, which is a
well,
nice
what did
place.
He know about farming?
Not much. Not much.
So, and your mama didn't know anything?
No. She wasn't farm raised. They were city people.
But your stepfather, he knew about farming.
Not much. He was a watchmaker. He could make a watch in the old country where he learned it. You had to make a watch to graduate out of raw material. Then you had to have the master craftsman inspected. And if you were passed, your work was accurate and proper and the watch ran as it should. Then you had to spend a year or two in as an apprentice with the different masters in the country.
Yeah.
So if he got a watch there, I always remember, I had my watch fixed the other day, just clean, $12. If he ever had to almost make that watch over, he blushed if he had to charge the poor man $3. usually $1, $1.50 is what he charged, $1 for cleaning a watch. Only and then for repairs he'd add on.
Well, good Lord.
But he did that at night, and in daytime he worked on the farm.
How did he learn all that business about fruit?
Oh, well, you grow up in it. You grow up in it.
He didn't grow up in it.
Oh, well, he worked at his, you know, Germans and Europeans generally are so short of land that if they can get a piece of land, oh, they just got it made.
Yeah.
They just love a piece of land of their own.
And he was like
so
that.
So he was like that. He worked, he liked blacksmithing, and he'd work on watch repairs. He was up in Oregon for a while with a friend up there who had a blacksmith shop, and we had a blacksmith shop on the farm. We had a forge, and we welded and made horseshoes, and I learned to shoe a horse because we had the forge, and we could shape the shoe up to fit the hoof and so on. And sometimes we'd have to, I still got a claw bar that he made one day. He was in a hurry and he flattened one end of a steel rod about so long, corrugated rod, flattened that end. Then he heated the other end and made it to pull nails and spikes.
Oh yeah.
And I still have it. I use it quite a bit because
yeah.
the flat end is much wider. You know, a claw bar now has a very narrow flat end, but his is wide.
Yeah.
So it's better. So he learned that, but he would do his watchmaking at night and work on the farm during the day.
Well, now
along with the rest of us,
he must have been some of those people there where you all settle. He must have been able to learn a little from them.
Learn a little what
from them other
about fruit, you mean?
Yeah, them people where you settle. Is that the only place you ever lived? Right there where you?
Yeah, that's where we grew up.
Yeah,
on that little farm there. I'll have to show you the picture of it. 5 years after we lost everything, I got the job here, farm foreman on the experimentation farm, $60 a month. Yeah. She did furnish me a house.
Well, now you're leaving this.
Then I saved out enough to go out there, and I had a little box camera, and I stood up on the hillside. I rented that picture here a day or two ago, and it showed the barn. It showed the house with the trees in the background.
It showed
the border fence.
You mean it was still there?
And the cascade of bushes down the old fence from, you know, the early settlers there collected the bark of that cascade shrub that's native there.
Yeah.
And sold it to help them to get started, you know, to get some income. It takes five or six years to get any income from an orchard.
Yeah.
So they used that cascade to make cascarettes out of in those days.
Yeah.
And they collected that, make them a few dollars, they could keep going.
And you saved money while you was farm foreman.
Yeah, enough to make the trip. But you could make that round trip by rail in those days for $228.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, but I lived close to the best all my life.
How long did you stay?
Out there? I was farm foreman there in those days.
I mean, how long did you, on your trip?
I was farm foreman in those days, and they allowed you 30 days.
Everybody got 30 days
then, provided you had no sickness during the year.
Oh, you went out there during your vacation?
Yeah, on my vacation. I went out there for a month.
While you were a farm foreman?
Yeah, while I was farm foreman. I wasn't married.
You went by yourself?
No, I wasn't married.
You went by yourself?
Yeah. I was kind of slow getting married somehow. I don't blame the girls. But then came the war, and that took 2 years off of me, and then you had to come back.
Mr. Nealon, out there now, your daddy, your stepfather, he could work on his watches at night.
Yeah, he worked on watches at night.
And then during the day, there's plenty to do, wasn't there?
Yeah, plenty.
Because what he was doing, he didn't actually farm, he just put in fruit trees.
Well, we had only one vineyard to add. Otherwise, everything had been planted up. But we had one piece of land about, it wasn't much, I'd say maybe 8 or 10 acres on a hillside that he made cuttings, grape cuttings, and he subscribed to the Pacific Rural Press. That was the farm paper for California in those days. And then he had a big library on winemaking. And he was an expert. He said you had to have pure grape juice. It had to have just the right amount of sugar on those hillsides there. The long afternoon sun on your vineyard, those grapes get sweeter and sweeter. And he said, now we'll have too much alcohol if we don't harvest them now. So we'd go out there and collect boxes, picking boxes, 60-pound picking boxes of grapes, and he'd put them through the rollers and 500-gallon fermenting tank. And make grape juice wine, and wonderful stuff.
He didn't have much time for that wildlife and stuff like that.
What kind of wildlife?
Well, jackrabbits and deer.
We provided the meat. That was the only way we had meat on the table.
But I'm talking about your stepfather. He had so much to do, he couldn't go back there.
No, he depended on us. We were growing up. See, my oldest, I was 8 years old. My oldest brother was 12. And we learned to shoot early. And ducks or geese or whatever, pigeons.
Yeah.
Cottontail, gray squirrels are twice as big as ours here.
Well, where did he?
Like you meet two of them.
Where did your stepfather get interested in the geese and things like that? How did he happen to know about them?
About what? geese.
Yes, and all those things.
He didn't know anything about him. He didn't know anything about him.
Well, all you was interested was just shooting them.
Yeah, the wild stuff, because we had to come Saturday if we were out of venison. Mother'd say somebody better be getting the guns out and getting some meat on the table here, as we'll be short next week.
Yeah.
Well, we go out and maybe have 25 mallard ducks to eat for the next week. Fixed up all kinds of ways.
That's all you fellas were interested in, just going out and shooting.
Yeah, provide something to eat.
Yeah.
You know, vegetables and fruits, not all the human body demands.
No. But that's all you interested in, just shooting them.
No, there's some sport in it, too. You get to be more or less expert. And if you don't learn the proper distance and the proper lead them, the proper distance, you miss them, and that'll cost you.
So, like
one of my neighbor's boys told us one day, oh, they had to do the same. He was a Swede, and he had 7 children. He said, we durstn't miss a shot or dad'll lick us.
Yeah.
So, ammunition cost money.
Yeah, but that's all you learned, just to lead them a little bit when you were shooting.
You had to learn where they are, why they are, when they are, and how they are.
You didn't do that
and
when you were 12 years old.
You have to learn that by experience.
You didn't do that when you were 12 years old.
You learned that quickly.
You didn't. You just walked along, waited for something to jump up.
No. You got to know your range. Where the food is, that's where the animal is. And where the protection is. For deer, if there isn't a chaparral thicket, there's no use looking for deer. Saw one when I was out there last April. Same old place. Deep hillside and shrubs.
Yeah.
Place to hide.
Yeah.
So.
But that's a long ways from just being interested in deer.
He was within a mile of our old home.
Things haven't
changed. You have to know.
You didn't care whether you shot a buck or a doe?
Oh, yes. We tried to keep within the law on that, especially when early days nobody cared, but finally the laws came in.
But in the early days you didn't care.
No, if you need meat, why, a young doe would be pretty good eating. Yeah. We did. I think we killed one before the law took over and became illegal to shoot doe.
Oh, you mean it goes that far back?
Yeah, way back there. We were kind of upset when they suddenly came in with game laws, disturb our ancient way. We didn't shoot anything just to be shooting it, though. But if you have to, you know, it takes a little meat to feed 6.
Yeah.
You can't go without meat, and this 8-pound jackrabbit would take care of a meal.
But you didn't have to learn anything about jackrabbits, Mr. Neal.
Yeah, you had to know when to go out to get them. You can't see one during the day. You have to get out there before sunup. As soon as the sun comes up, before the sun comes up, they disappear.
Just
the
like
day. They hide all day long, sleep all day long, and they feed at night only.
Is that the way that our rabbits do?
I think more or less they do here.
More or less.
Too. Yes, cottontails is all we have, and swamp rabbits.
Yeah.
But you don't see them unless you happen to disturb them in their resting place.
So if you wanted jackrabbits, you'd have to go out there before day.
Yeah, before daylight. Or you can often get to shoot one before it gets at sundown, before it gets too dark to sight.
Just look
down your sight barrel. You could get one occasionally then. Then in daytime, if you knew where to look, there's a little clearing there. 2 or 3 little chaparral bushes there. Might be a pretty good place for a jackrabbit to spend the day. Let's walk over there and kick the bushes. Out he bounces the way he goes, and you get your bead on him, and you got a jackrabbit.
Oh, so you could kick him up?
Yeah, okay, not many times, but occasionally you get one that way.
Yeah.
But you have to know your range, you have to know your animal, you have to know their habits, and where to look, and when to look.
Well, yes, but you did that when you were just growing up?
Yeah, of course, that's all we knew. We didn't know anything else. No civilization around there. The only thing is a little country school. That was the only other diversion. But you can learn something out of doors that way. And then if I had a little time on Sunday afternoon, I'd go down the creek and pan for some coal, do a little crevicing, maybe come up with 25, 30, 40, as much as 70 cents worth some days if I was lucky. So you learn where to look for gold, too. Don't waste time looking in the wrong place. Creeks, rocky creeks, usually in our neighborhood, all had a little. But I got back there after the Depression, and nobody could get a job, and they had scratched the whole creek's bottoms over until I couldn't find enough to talk about.
Well, now, did your other brothers do the same thing?
Yeah, we all did pretty nearly the same.
You did it together?
But my oldest brother spent a good deal of time because he is more mechanical. And he found out by buying high-grade smokeless powder and shot, and he had a lead bullet casting outfit for 44-40 rifle shells, and he would cast the lead bullets and use the right powder and the recapping. He got into trouble with that one time because he got a new recapper where you put the cap in the shell. And he pressed down on it too hard, and that shotgun shell exploded in his hand. He tore his fingers up badly. So, so sometimes those caps are very sensitive. Sometimes they're not, and your firing pin hits one, and it doesn't even explode. But mostly they do. So he reloaded most of our ammunition, and we got the ammunition that would have cost us 75 cents for 25, he could do those for 25 cents.
Yeah.
By buying a 10-pound can of powder and a 25-pound bag of shot pellets, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Now, was he the mechanical one?
Yeah, he was mechanical. He was good at that. He could do... He and Dad built the house and the barn and things like that. He'd be good at that. I wasn't any good at that. Dad used to complain about me. He said, "That fella can't saw a 4x4 off straight." Well, if you give up, you don't learn. You have to stay with it. But he could do it naturally, and I'd have a little slant to it, maybe.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be my... accuracy.
You was in the wrong company then, weren't you?
He didn't take that. He didn't stand for that. And that wasn't exactly right. You ought to make him learn how to do it.
Well, he couldn't have it, Mr.
Yeah,
Neil.
But if he had somebody that knew how and didn't have to be told, he put me in charge of the livestock. I knew how to handle a horse.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
That's the reason when he was telling us about the oatmeal. You was the one that went out and fed the Fed.
Yes, I had most of the horse work to do, plowing and cultivating and things like that. Of course, my younger brother didn't do it too.
But now, your older brother and your stepfather built a house you lived in?
They didn't build it exactly, but they added to it because... He was a bachelor before he married mother.
Yeah.
And he had to make room for a time. so I had to fix the attic up because we slept upstairs.
Yeah.
And fix the attic up with windows, and I always enjoyed that because I have my head close to the open windows in the spring of the year, and the orioles and the kingbirds and the linnets would be singing there before daylight. It's a nice way to wake up. The mockingbird would be here, or the redbird, or they call him cardinal.
So that was your stepfather's place.
Yeah, that was his place. We left the old farm.
Uh-huh.
I still walked the old fence.
That, how far off was the old farm?
Last April, about a mile.
Oh,
maybe
so he just neighbors.
Maybe a little over a mile, over the hill.
He was a bachelor.
He was a bachelor. Yeah.
And then your father died, so he just took your family on.
Well, they had quite a tie-in. Father died when I was six, but you know, brother was on that, when he died, on that new, no income yet. Trees were too young. They were only about 3 years old or four. The bear was enough. And so she had four children on her hands. And, you know, she wasn't a farmer either.
Yeah.
City girl. So we did have a cow, and she tended to the garden. That helped some.
Yeah.
And one time the cow was... our cow was in a little pasture next to a neighbor's pasture and house. New settler then. German too he was. And he had to work away, but our cow was, heifer was young, not yet ready to have calves, but the neighbor's dog was chasing that heifer, something terrible, and chewing on it, and drotted by the jaw, and the whole lifetime of that cow, she had a crooked jaw. So and the mother couldn't get the woman, the man was away, to call that dog off. She just didn't care. So the mother got out, we had a big old pistol there. She didn't know anything about shooting much, but it was a long-barreled thing. It was a pinfire. It had big bullets, must have been over 45 in caliber, ancient thing. And she pulled that gun down on the dog and didn't hurt him much, but enough to keep him off. I don't know whether she grazed him or what. I was just six then. I didn't know. And the dog left then and left that cow alone. Well, her husband came home from work after that on a Saturday night, and his wife told him about my mother shooting his dog and didn't hurt him. He was around the same as usual. Well, he was a drinking man. He got drunk. Then he got a shotgun, and when she told him about that, he came over to shoot our dog. And he did, but the dog got in his house in time to avoid being more than just scattered with shot. I guess he may have been too drunk to aim it right, I don't know. But then he turned around and took a shot at the other through the window when she was carrying my youngest boy as a baby. No, that was the little girl, the last child who died, carrying the baby. And she sent my oldest brother then over the hill. He ran all the way and got the nearest neighbor, Brown, B-R-A-U-N, to come over there and protect her. Because that man was drunk, wandering around the place shooting. And he came in from the back, and he got a hold of that big pistol. mother had used on the dog. That's the only thing we had there then. And I was wanting to see, and although it didn't let me look out of the window much, see what was going on. But he stood on the steps there, and this man's name was Peters. And he said, "Peters, you go home." Yeah, he says, he held out that pistol so he could see it. And he says, "That pistol isn't loaded." Well, it was later our stepfather, and he said, "There's enough in here for you. You go home." He took up his gun as if he was going to shoot him. He cracked down with that pistol just like that. Caught him right in the Adam's apple, broke his neck, killed him instantly. So he loaded him up in the wheelbarrow. I remember seeing that, and carried him home, carried him to his house, but only about 200-300 yards away, about 400 maybe. So after that, he was a pretty good friend of the family. And 2 years later, mother married him because, you know, the kids, 12, 8, 7, 6, coming up, a woman's not just the one to bring them up. You need a steady hand.
You just lucky, weren't you?
Yeah. Well, he was kind to us, but he was a hard worker, and he demanded hard work, too. And we produced it.
You know, you were just 18 or 19 when you left out there.
Yeah.
Well, that's during those years there when you're supposed to be sort of reckless and all. Except you had to work mostly. You wasn't very reckless when you was growing up.
No, we didn't have much time for mischief.
Yeah.
Very little.
You didn't play pranks and all.
It does, to some extent, but nothing destructive. It didn't hurt anybody.
No.
Might have aggravated a few people.
Well, what I'm trying to get, you see, you read that Abbott's History of the Navy, and you just took to all those naval heroes.
Yes, I thought the various battles and the cuteness of it. For instance, one of our chief ships expecting always to run into one of the British chief main prize ships. So this captain, I've forgotten the name now, he dressed his ship up just like his Majesty's ship, sailing ship, of course. And when he bumped into the sister British ship, while the captain, he invited the captain aboard. And all the sailors, if were visible, were dressed in English uniform and all, and the officer, the captain of the ship, came over in a boat out at sea, and he walked up on the deck, and he says, "Well, the ship's kept as neat and ship shape as this could only be found in His Majesty's fleet." And they went downstairs, down below between decks, and finally the American officer says, "Sir, do you know whose ship you're on?" "Why, His Majesty so-and-so." And all he says, "This is the U.S. frigate Constellation." "And you're a prisoner." He had to pull down his flag. He had to give up because the captain wasn't there. So you see, there's trickery in everything.
Yeah.
Well, I thought I liked it for this reason, because nobody was shot to death over that victory.
Yes.
You know who won the Battle of the Constitution, the Guerriere, that famous Sean Paul Jones exploit by winning over the Serapis, the English ship.
No.
One sailor. That's what impressed me. A common sailor. He got him a bucket of hand grenades, and he climbed while they were battling each other, shooting with a cannon, trying to sink each other. Climbed up on the, where I used to go on the mast with his bucket of hand grenades and began peppering the British ship from up there with grenades. And one of them went down into the hold and exploded and set the ammunition dump, exploded the ammunition dump and set it afire. That's why he had to surrender his ship. So the account said that some weeks later, this sailor, who really was responsible for winning, because John Paul Jones' ship was practically shot to pieces. And he was up before the captain, and he could make any requests. So his buddy told him, "Now you be sure to ask the old man," that's the captain always in the Navy, "the old man will refuse you nothing." So he stepped up and he demanded double rations of grog for the next 6 weeks. And that's all he got for winning the battle,
yeah,
single-handed. Yeah. So it's stories like that I enjoy reading.
Well, let me tell you,
I've got to run.
Let me
I've
tell you.
Overstayed.
I got you. I got one, two little points here before you go. I don't get up.
Oh, the wife has got something for me to do. It's getting to be noon.
Well, let me tell you. But all you done in the Navy was just get caught for profanity.
No, I was now operating a 6-inch Navy gun.
Yes, but you didn't do anything like these.
But I didn't have to kill anybody, thank the Lord.
Or throw grenades like that.
We'd take a shot every once in a while at what we thought was a periscope on the Mediterranean. You know, a Navy 6-inch gun, that doesn't mean it's 6 inches long.
This is the end of Channel One Right. The end of Channel One Right, and the first part of the visit with Mr. Neeland is Tuesday morning, the 7th of August, 73. This is the end of Channel One Right, and this is continued on the next, on Over, Channel One Over. End of Channel One Right, and the first part of the visit with Mr. Neeland is Tuesday morning, the 7th of August, 73. Channel One Right, the end of Channel One Right, and the first part of the visit.